Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. All right, parents, this one is for you, those who have little ones. We are bringing on a pediatric physical therapist. Her name is Kaylee Nolan, and she's a mama of two, not only a pediatric physical therapist, but she also lives it. So it really is her mission in preventing developmental delay by empowering parents toward what she calls purposeful play. And she's going to talk through some of the skills and some of the techniques that she uses, but way more as well. And you can catch her at The Movement Mama. So that is her handle. Go look it up on Instagram right now. I talk about it in the podcast as well because she truly delivers such great information. So go look at her page right now if you can, because she's really encouraging all things motherhood and motor milestones. She just makes it easy to attain without shaming anyone. And she is so incredibly smart. Her stuff is just eye-catching, easy to comprehend. And that's why I had to have her on the podcast. We are so excited about this episode. So be sure to share it out with others that you know can benefit from it as well. Kaylee, thank you so, so much for being here on the podcast. We just appreciate your time because we know you're a mama of two and you're really not only educating as a pediatric physical therapist, but actually living it in real life as well. So we just thank you so much for taking the time and being here with us.
I'm so excited. Thank you for having me. Yeah, my kiddos are down for nap right now. So let's cross our fingers and toes that they take a good nap.
So I'm just so excited to have you on because, I mean, one, I think that development, human development is so fascinating, especially in those first few years. And I'm so excited to dive in on a lot of this stuff with you. What initially drew you into this area? I know having kids yourself, I'm sure, makes you even more passionate about it. But was there any reason that you initially wanted to steer towards pediatric physical therapy?
Yeah, I just always had an interest in children and felt my heart gravitating there. And, you know, where your passions can be, you know, I feel like if I could mix my passion and really where my heart was with my work, how awesome would that be? So all through school, I did a lot of volunteering with nonprofits and things with kids. And I thought, well, you know, let's hope that this works out, but we'll just see. And then I just continued to really lean into that and love it. And so I loved it, but it was still a job, and I didn't feel as deeply connected as I do now on the other side of things, being a mom myself. You know, I feel like it turned from a job that I loved to a job, if you can even call it a job, you know, at this point, because it's my life. I love helping parents feel confident with their child's development. And I've completely shifted the way I treat as a clinician now being a mom and realizing, oh, God bless those early patients of mine and their parents, because I would give them home exercise programs. And I, as we all do, you know, when we're learning, but that were completely unrealistic for a parent. So it's been so fun to be able to mix the fact that I'm a mom and I can connect with parents in that way, but also find ways that I know are part of your daily routines, things that make sense without having to add on to a parent's already busy day, but also that they know they're taking a really active role in their baby's development. So the rest is history.
That's so funny, one, that you highlight that so well in terms of, you know, especially when you're a new grad, you don't know the realities. And even for physical therapists who work with orthopedics, a lot of people will give these long exercise programs and the reality is no one's going to get to it. And so I think that's just so special that you've been able to put yourself in their shoes. And I think it just gets highlighted even more. Like, you guys need to go look at her Instagram right now, The Movement Mama. And that's how I found her in the first place, because your stuff is so incredible, relatable, and you make it easier and feel attainable to be able to understand how you can really utilize these tools or utilize play or just, and it makes sense. Like, I don't have kids, so I feel like there's a lot of questions that I have for you right now because we do want to have them. But I think your work and what you do just makes it so attainable. So I just need to plug that real quick, that everyone needs to go follow you and check that out.
Well, thank you very much.
Of course. But starting at like the basics, when we talk about developmental stages, I think what happens a lot is that people get into comparison, you know, of here are the typical stages and here's where my baby's supposed to be. How do you kind of approach it from the Google side of things?
Absolutely. Well, and to be honest with you, part of me creating my space online is because Google can really lead us down some scary rabbit holes in the pediatric world, in the orthopedic world, wherever. I try to tell parents to stay off Google, and I've learned the hard way myself from thinking, oh, you know, I have a clinical background, I can Google and still be discerning. And it's not true. When you're a mom and you're in the throes of, you know, the fourth trimester, especially where you're just trying to grasp what even you're supposed to do with this new way of life, with this tiny human, it can be really scary. So part of why I have started my online space is to hopefully be a point person that a mom can come to. I actually have a free milestone checklist that's research-based and based off the one that I use in the clinic, but just so moms can have an actual real resource that they know and trust are the milestone ranges. And so even then, it's still hard, but you can Google things and you'll get a million different answers. But this is one that I know, you know, has been researched and studied, and I'm giving them good information. But as far as the comparison, it's so hard. And a lot of my mom friends and people I'm connected with in the mom community have been talking recently about how often postpartum anxiety can present as control over milestones. So we're trying to micromanage our child hitting these visible benchmarks of our success as a mother. And it can be really, really difficult. And I can't say that I could attack that postpartum anxiety piece. But I think that's a part of the whole picture too, that's involved, is, okay, how much of this is me just wanting to know more and help my baby through their developmental trajectory? And how much of this is me consuming more information than I need to be and trying to outwardly show, you know, I'm a good mom, my baby's okay, we're going to be okay, I've got this. So I don't know if that makes sense at all, the way I'm explaining it, but it can be really hard. And so my space at the Movement Mama and through the courses I create, really, I hope to take a proactive approach where a mom is not yet even worried. She's about to have her baby maybe, and she decides to download my coursework and learn like we used to learn when we had parenting books. And not, you know, of course, there's still parenting books, but I think we're all learning so much more in the online space. But just learn, okay, I don't need to stress about this. This is so exciting. Truly, every milestone is such a miracle. There's so many amazing things happening, especially in that first 3 years of life with our babies. And so kind of reclaiming that joy rather than perpetuating anxiety around milestones.
That's so important. And it's like, so I can only relate from viewing my own health and sometimes, you know, Googling things about my own health and how concerning that can be. I can't even imagine if I had a little one at some point and was starting to Google and have that internal, you know, anxiety as the father about, oh, are they hitting these milestones? And I'm wondering, how do you kind of coach or give people recommendations in like how much they should help or how much they should be, you know, trying to stimulate certain activities for their child? Because I'm sure there are great ways that you can, as a parent, help them progress through stages of crawling and you know, up to upright and vertical play and stuff like that versus being that overbearing parent who's just like, I need you to do this so we can hit this milestone.
Yeah. So a lot of the direction that I try to go is more play setup, meeting them where they're at and following their lead. And I would say I'm really in this exciting phase where I do feel that my kind of clinical direction is evolving as I'm in the trenches of motherhood. And so kind of following the child's lead is something that I've been doing more, even with my older kiddos. I have a 2- and a 4-year-old. And it really, you know, you think about an adult, we're so much more motivated by the things we're interested in. So a baby would be the same way. So when we notice that they're really interested in trying to explore their feet, like, let's lean into that, because that's a precursor to rolling back to belly, is that abdominal strength and the flexibility in the legs to be able to roll over. So let's follow their lead there. If they're starting to try to kick their legs up in the air, you know, we maybe help them grasp them. So kind of my methodology is watch what they're doing, watch what they're interested in, while also being mindful of where we're kind of going developmentally, just having that in the recesses of our mind, but really following their lead and just gently nurturing things. And if they feel like they're really frustrated, so you'll see these points of frustration, I recommend that parents show them how to motor plan an activity and then they back off. So maybe they can tell that their baby's on their belly and they're getting really angry and really frustrated, and they're ready to be done with tummy down play. And so rather than the parent just rescuing them, picking them up and putting them on their back, I really like to encourage parents to take them through that motion, through that motor plan, helping to ingrain that in their brain for the next time they're frustrated. Oh, mom showed me, I need to lift my leg up this way and tuck my arm. And of course, our babies are probably not thinking through it in that way, but they've got that kind of pattern down. And so then the next time, maybe we give a little bit less support and see how much they can do themselves.
Ooh, I love that. And just starting to understand those tips and strategies. I mean, I know that just looking through your courses and stuff, that is what you provide. You're teaching those real life tangible skills, because that's what you don't really get from Google. You just get, oh, here's what you should be doing, and here's what is bad if you're not doing that, you know, and that fear starts to come in, or that comparison of, oh, my baby's not here yet. Why is this other baby, you know, progressing so much? And it's just so interesting. And I know sometimes as well, like the progression, some people think, oh, well, my kid kind of skipped crawling, or they only did it with one leg and now they're up more. Is that bad? Like, why is crawling so pertinent?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the biggest thing for me with crawling is the neurological implications. And so that sounds big and scary, but it just basically means that we are born with primitive reflexes that help us move through our world until we can establish more refined and mature movement patterns. So through movement, particularly in the first year, babies get rid of some of those reflexive movement patterns and move into a mature movement pattern that they're fully in control of. And crawling is one of the number one things that moves through several of those. And so it's very, very important. We can see repercussions if a baby doesn't crawl on hands and knees or doesn't crawl on hands and knees for very long. But a lot of people think, oh, they skip crawling, you know, where my baby's going to be messed up forever. You know, that's a lot of the fear that I get from parents. And that's just not true. Kids love to crawl around, and we can still get a lot of those same positive benefits by having them play in a crawling position as they get older, even into their elementary years. So crawling is super important neurologically. It also stretches out the muscles of the hand and the arm that allow for like a better grasp of writing utensils, for sports, things like that. It also helps with visual acuity and just development of kind of tying back into those reflex patterns. If a child doesn't crawl or doesn't work through one of those reflexes, sometimes we'll even see some difficulty with, say, they're sitting at a desk and then they're raising their head to copy things off the board at school, and then they're looking back down. Sometimes can see some issues with that there. Sometimes it can lead to some sensory processing things. Again, kind of going back to that neurological side of things. So it's very important, but it's also one of those things that we have to remember. We didn't screw our children up. They're not messed up. there's always things that we can be doing, particularly through play, to make it fun to really get all those good benefits of crawling on hands and knees.
That's so great. And I kind of want to move forward with this progression of going from crawling and then some upright play. And when kids start to be able to weight bear and maybe start cruising along the furniture. And I've heard or seen some parents say, like, you know, my baby's so hesitant to come away from that furniture and you know, play in less supported situations to be able to get those first unsupported steps. And I saw an amazing post of yours that you helped, you know, utilize play in order to be able to encourage a kid to start playing in less supported situations. Can you kind of talk through some tips that you give parents to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the number one thing I'll say is the day my daughter was born, my grandma said, "Oh my goodness, she's so interested in the world and the people around her. And how she is today, you will see, is the way she's going to be for the rest of her life." And I thought, oh, good grief, that's such a grandma-ism. But it really is true. Their little personalities and their way that they view the world really does carry forward. And so the first thing I tell parents is, you know, we don't need to force this. Once they're walking and you're going to be chasing them everywhere anyway. But some babies just need more time to feel confident. And so the more play we can have in standing, the more we build that confidence. And so we kind of play into that with just switching little things up about how they're playing in standing. So if they're really confident in cruising at the couch, maybe we move to cruising at the kitchen cabinets and you've got things dangling out of the cabinets for them to come get. Or maybe the post that you're talking about was with painter's tape. I love to take painter's tape and just tape their favorite little toys on the wall or the cabinet or Christmas ribbons. So that's a really great one. Sometimes I'll even encourage parents to move pieces of furniture just temporarily close enough together where they could, in theory, move from one side of the room to the other by just cruising and transferring surfaces, because babies have been horizontal, you know, up until this point, which is so much of their life. And so sometimes it just takes that light bulb moment of, oh, I'm motivated to go get to my mom in the kitchen, and she lined up all these dining room chairs, and I think I can get to her in this position if I, you know, cruise along these chairs. So sometimes it's something as simple as that, is they just don't even really realize that they can move in standing. Or if it's a big open room, that's really scary. We have to walk a few steps before we're going to walk several feet. So those are kind of some of my favorite tricks. And then also switching their support to being posterior. So babies are very dependent early on like those push toys, or holding onto the couch or coffee table with their hands, or walking with their hands held in front of them. And if we can just make that simple switch of standing maybe with their back against the couch, where they have to start working in those balance and writing reactions a little bit more, it just helps to improve the maturity of their standing position.
Oh, I love that. I mean, I like even just seeing my nieces and nephews and thinking about that, like I don't, my thought was never to have, you know, making sure they're standing with something against their back. It was always like forward and can their hands touch something? Mm-hmm. So I love that, you know, you bring up just something else to be aware of, another piece of the puzzle. And I know like a lot of kids, they like to stand, like you hold a baby and they immediately want to straighten out and stand on their feet, right? And if a parent feels like, oh, well, my baby loves to stand and this is just something that's great, is it great to continue to have them always in the standing position?
So by about 6 months, we would expect to see a baby be able to bear all their weight through their legs when we're holding on to their trunk. So it's normal. They like it. But what parents don't understand is that standing is easy in comparison to belly down skills. So even things like rolling, standing is a lot easier than rolling because we can just lock out our joints, and babies do this. You'll see they just lock out their little legs and stiffen and they're standing. And so it's so fun for parents. And I never want to steal that joy of like, oh my gosh, look at my little baby. They're standing. They're so strong. And they are. But I think where we get into trouble is then this baby industry is telling us we need to put our babies in all of these devices to keep them happy. So a parent sees, oh, my 6-month-old who may just be learning to sit up and roll over, now I can put them in standing for play and they're so happy. And so we run the risk of staying in like an activity table for longer than we should. And longer than we should, meaning I try to recommend that parents don't go by a number of minutes. We don't have the brain power to calculate how many minutes, but trying to just get twice as much floor time, whatever that looks like, unrestricted movement time as time spent in what we call baby containers. So activity tables and things like that. And so to answer your question in short, no, it's not bad to allow a baby to stand, but we also want to make sure that we're keeping in the back of our minds the developmental skills that we hope for them to move through before they're independently standing and walking. So if they're not yet sitting up or they're not yet crawling on their belly or on hands and knees, we want to still make that the emphasis. And then inevitably, when they need us to hold them, those bursts throughout the day are totally fine to let them stand in our lap.
I really, really like that line you just said about we should have twice as much ground time or unrestricted movement time versus, you know, having time in, I don't know what you call them, the baby containers or these movement containers.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be honest, I think that adults should take that same recommendation and have twice as much unrestricted movement time if you tend to be restricted by a desk or a computer or something for work.
Yeah.
That's a whole other topic. But yeah. I really did want to talk about some of these baby containers you mentioned being like the walkers or the jumper or bouncy thing that, you know, yes, helps a kid put weight through their legs and may give them some assistance. I just feel like there's so many mixed messages on, is this thing bad for your kid? Is this something that can help with their development? Is there any benefit to having or using devices like that?
I would say the kiddos that I often would say to a parent, hey, I think this would be a good idea, are actually sometimes my kiddos who are a little bit more delayed. So if we're encountering some lower muscle tone and some delayed milestones, we still want unrestricted movement, but sometimes we really need to work on that bone density and their strength in a more upright position. So I won't go too much into that, but those are usually the only times that I will say, I think you need to get one of these. Otherwise, I usually say if a parent wants to, or they're going to need something like that. A lot of parents are working from home right now in the last 18 months. That has been an extra challenge. So that's another component, is I encourage parents to kind of go into it open-handed and assess what they really need. And if they do need something where they're going to have to take work calls throughout the day and they need to know their baby is safe and entertained, that's something that's so specific to their situation that I don't want to be saying, you should never use these things, because that's unrealistic for some people. And so I just go back to the twice as much unrestricted time if you're going to use them. But, you know, really part of the battle that I feel like I'm fighting in my online space is this idea that we have to have all these expensive, large pieces of equipment for our baby. And so without getting on too much of a soapbox, you know, there's millions of dollars being put into marketing and advertising towards parents that this is what you need to be a good parent, to be a parent who having a baby is like, now you have this cute human, but you still can do everything you did before you were a parent. You can be as productive at work. You'll get just as much sleep. You know, all these things that really aren't natural. They're not natural and realistic expectation of our babies or of ourselves. And so I feel like I'm really fighting that battle of, you don't need these things. If you want them, use them in moderation. But it's okay if your baby needs to be held. It's okay if they wake up throughout the night. Those are all normal things for a baby to do. And movement is so important. And I know you guys are really right there with me that it's so important to continuing or to getting a solid foundation to movement right out the gate. I took a course in undergrad on, you know, obesity in childhood. And how little movement children are getting these days. And so it really does start from day one. We want to encourage them and show them that it's exciting to move and it makes us feel good to move. And it gets us to things that we want and allows us to be more independent. So, you know, in general, those containers, they're okay, but they're not as necessary as a lot of companies would have us believe they are to be. So I hope that makes sense and is never shaming at all of anyone using them. I have a couple of them in my home too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's all so incredibly important and just continuing to come back to this. I mean, and just the reality, like marketing is very good. And sometimes we can get lost in what, you know, we need to have or we should have and getting all these things and the realities of sometimes needing the help and mm-hmm. utilizing them as needed. So I love how you paint the picture and the reality of it all in order to allow people the opportunity to understand when it would be useful and maybe not as much. So I love the way that you answer that. I know when I was going through school and learning a little bit about pediatrics, but just being in some of these positions when we place babies in some of those, you know, walkers or jumping, like their legs are so open and externally rotated, or some of their sitting positions, a lot of people question like, oh, should they be sitting in W? And what are your thoughts around what could happen at the hip joint? Or is that bad? Is that normal? Can you walk us through that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the first things that comes to mind is jumpers specifically. I feel like I need to give a couple disclaimers. So with baby containers, the only two that I would almost never recommend, baby walkers, the ones where you actually sit them in, I would never recommend. And I'll go into that. Jumpers, occasionally I will recommend for an older baby with developmental delay who we really do need to be working on some strengthening and they have low motivation to move. But jumpers specifically often have a very narrow harness seat. And so it allows baby's legs to hang down and actually doesn't support their hips in a good position. So that externally rotated position early on is what helps form the acetabulum and the hip joint. And so we want that to reduce the risk of hip dysplasia. Well, if baby's in a jumper and there's a whole lot of pressure right there at the pelvis, we do run the risk of some issues happening at the hip. And I also just feel like that repetitive jumping, especially because babies do love it. They love those jumpers and that's why parents get them is because they're happy. But I do have concerns and there's been some early research on just that repetitive stress on an immature joint potentially being detrimental. And, you know, we're seeing earlier ages of injury with competitive sports, the earlier that kids are starting, seeing a lot of athletes have issues with that before they're even out of high school. And so, you know, I just tell parents, we really don't want to be placing excess pressure on their joints if we don't have to, because if you want them to play a sport one day, we want to set them up for the most success. We don't want those joints to already be worn out. So that's kind of my jumper soapbox. And then walkers specifically, kind of same thing. They have that pelvic harness that we just sit baby in, and babies will either sit and just pull themselves with their heels, almost kind of like when older patients are in a wheelchair and they pull with their legs, mm-hmm. they get really hypertrophied in those hamstrings. And so we don't want that. Or they'll stand up and lean forward. They'll lean their entire body forward to propel the walker. And that can cause some abnormal walking patterns, some asymmetries of strength, and actually has been linked to a delay in independent walking because they get very used to walking in that way. Well, if you're standing upright and you lean your body forward like that, they'll just fall. And so they've also been linked to some safety issues. I think they've made a lot of modifications that have helped with that, but falling downstairs, being able to reach a hot oven before they're old enough to realize they shouldn't touch it, etc. So those are the only two that I say are an absolute no. But to speak to alignment things, a lot of the infant seats that are really popular, so the ones that you sit them down in, create a really rounded back posture, which is normal and typical for a baby less than about 5 to 6 months of age. But at that point, we want to start seeing more of the development of the natural curves of the spine. And so if they're sitting upright in that C-curve posture, it can continue to limit the development of their normal spinal curves. Mm. So those are some things to think about. And then I also wanted to touch on baby wearing when we're talking about containers, because kind of twofold. Number one, that's the thing that I recommend when parents are like, well, I have to have somewhere, you know, I can put them to get the dishes done or to get dinner made. Baby wearing is really one of my mainstays of what I recommend parents do, but it can be very intimidating at first. And so I have tried to build out resources to make parents really comfortable and confident. And on your guys' end, you know, I would love to hear, as far as one of the biggest complaints I get is we're just so weak postpartum in our core, which is where we're supporting baby from in baby wearing. And, you know, they're not in our belly anymore. They're on the outside. And so we have to really recruit all those muscles that are kind of turned off and weakened at that point to baby wear. And so, you know, that's kind of another piece of the picture. But in baby wearing, we also want to make sure that their legs are in a nice position where I call it the frog leg position or the M position, where their knees are at least level with their hips, if not above. And that, again, helps reduce the risk of hip dysplasia and helps form that hip joint really nicely.
That's such a good tool, I think, to utilize. And I think it could, I mean, to your point about one of the challenges where, you know, women postpartum are feeling so core or so weak in their core and kind of relearning how to recruit all those core muscles. I think there could be a fun way to kind of integrate baby wearing into that, you know, core re-education program for women postpartum. We'll have to talk with some of our pelvic health therapist friends that work with lots of mamas postpartum on that stuff. I did want to chat a little with you because you've kind of mentioned about how as kids are starting to grow up and in their earlier years of whether it's schooling or once they get into the school system, we're just seeing such low levels of activity in kids in general and such increasing levels of things like childhood obesity and things like that. How kind of throughout, I know you said you have a 4-year-old, but especially as a busy parent who is working and running your own business, how can we continue to influence our kids to stay moving when they might see us sitting and working throughout the day? I just think it's such a challenge that we're facing these days. We're seeing such lower levels of movement in adults, and that's kind of reflecting in the movement levels of our kids and the next generations coming up. I mean, do you have any pointers for parents to just keep their kids active?
Wow, that's a big question. And I love it. I'm going to do my best to answer it. And a lot of this is just coming from my own personal experience. But
it's a lot of pressure to ask you to solve this question here on the podcast. No, I get
don't feel like you were saying that. But just, you know, it is hard. I think because as adults, we're facing all this sedentary lifestyle. And so we really have to lead by example. Babies and children love to imitate what they see. And that can be in all realms of life. But if we aren't willing to be active, then how could we expect our children to be active? And I don't mean you have to suddenly become, you know, a marathon runner or an avid hiker if you're not interested. But every single day, I believe so strongly, both as a clinician and a mom, in the importance of being in nature, in vitamin D, in exploring play in that way, rather than it always being very structured. So we as a family every day walk to a park or go to a park and walk around there. And also being mindful of, once their endurance for walking improves, you know, letting them get out of the stroller and explore their limits of safety, getting on the playground. The playground is such a phenomenal place to work on some of those higher level motor skills without really having to put in much mental effort, because they're just exploring their balance. early jumping, climbing, safely getting down off of structures, that vestibular kind of enhancement of slides and swings. And so just getting outside as a family has such tremendous benefits for movement, but also in so many other realms of health and life. So I guess that would be my biggest recommendation, is just really kind of walking the talk, I guess. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
So we can't say we want our kids to be active, but not be active ourselves. And I have not mastered this, but I have many good friends who incorporate movement in their own like exercise regimen with their kids. And it's chaotic at first. And there's still some days that are chaotic, but a lot of them, it's just part of their natural daily routine. So the kids are used to it, and they're really modeling that for their children for generations to come.
That is everything. I grew up with always seeing parents, like we went on family walks together, and I can remember, since I can remember, my mom always exercising or running, and I'd be riding my bike next to her, or I know that she would put us in the sandbox, I don't remember, and she'd go run laps. So it was like, but yeah, having that modeled as a lifestyle, that I contribute that so much to why movement is so important in my life now, is because I grew up seeing that naturally. And everything you're saying, as hard as it could be sometimes to find time, to find the energy, to find, you know, the space and the time to do it, I think is so incredibly huge for who you're modeling it for. I love that you bring that up in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always say I'm a better parent outside, because they just thrive. I mean, we all as human beings thrive in nature, out moving our bodies and, you know, feeling the warmth of the sun. And you're absolutely right. As a working parent, especially, our daily movement looked a lot different. So when I was working full time, it was more like I quickly got dinner on the table. We had dinner, and then we made it a priority, even just for 30 minutes, to go outside.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be this big extravagant thing. It truly can be. Some days we just decide to take a nature walk, and we walk down the block and back. And for my little one's little feet, like, that's plenty for mm-hmm. them, you know, but they're at least getting out and they're moving, and kind of exploring like different kinds of bikes and, the novelty of all of that. And, yeah, I think it's so, so important. And I agree with you. My mom, all growing up, was, she would go on walks outside, and we'd go on walks with her, and, we were out in nature a lot. And I really valued those times in childhood, and it didn't feel like work. I think that can be problematic too, is with the obesity problem in children, is we're expecting them to exercise like we exercise as adults, when really they're kids. And if allowed to and encouraged to, movement can be fun. It doesn't have to be really structured. It can just be simply being outside and getting creative.
I love how much like the outdoors is being highlighted right now, because even growing up myself, you know, we've all brought up our moms now. My mom always used to say like being outdoors was her therapy, like being outdoors was her like a happy place where she would go to, like you're kind of highlighting, get so many different health benefits. And I think we're seeing that reflected in so much different research, that just being outside, it can be so valuable to our health in many different ways. Movement and development of our little ones just being one of them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And a silver lining of the pandemic, you know, we really leaned into getting outside because it was safe and we could see some friends outside. You know, we could go meet up with just maybe one friend and her children and be on the playground and feel, personally, we felt safe being outside in that way. And so it's encouraged us to be able to connect with one another in that way outdoors as well.
Kaylee, I just feel like I can continue to ask you questions all day, but I don't want to take up so much of your time. Maybe when we have our own little one and I need more information, yay, not only will I get your programs, but maybe we can bring you back on selfishly.
I would love that. That will be an exciting time.
But I would love to you to just chat about these programs that you have, one that you just recently released, which is incredible, and what you're doing within them to really help support mamas.
Yeah, thanks. So I am in the process of building out what I call my on-track courses. So my goal is to come at development from a proactive standpoint rather than a reactive, but inevitably sometimes we do have to react to things that we think, oh, I kind of missed that, and I want to help my baby with their development in this area. And so my courses really are focusing on gently nurturing your child's development. So not forcing anything, but just giving you the tools that you can build into your daily routines and rhythms as a parent, that you know, okay, like I just started incorporating this. This is just part of our routine now. And I know I'm setting my baby up for success, and I no longer have to have that mental overwhelm of, did I do tummy time today? Or, you know, are they on track? I just know it's only my job to play with them and purposefully play with them. It's kind of what I call it, is purposeful play, as far as just playing with intention and where they're at developmentally. And then it's their job to learn how to move as a baby. That's their job, is to learn and grow. And we can't control that. So I currently have a tummy time guide and a roll on track course and a crawl on track course. And I'm working to continue building my digital resources in hopes that one day it'll just be that whole kind of birth to walking, where a parent can feel really confident they've got the strategies they need. They've got it all in one place. They don't have to be, you know, Googling or going to Pinterest or going to 10 different Instagram accounts to try to piece together what they want to focus on. It'll just be kind of a parent manual, if you will, for motor development.
That's so exciting. And I think those are resources that would help any parent, you know, feel like they have a little more direction. So if that sounds intriguing to anybody, we'll have that link down in the show notes and you can check out the On Track courses. Is there anywhere else that people can go to learn more about you? You have Instagram, you have the On Track courses.
Yeah. So you can also find me at themovementmamablog.com. I share things like I'm getting ready to release my holiday gift guides for kiddos. That was so overwhelming for me as a first-time parent. And now, from both the view of a parent and a clinician, what really matters with play? You know, let's not get a bunch of fluff that's just going to take up space. Let's get things that our kids are going to love and that are going to promote movement, but also development and things like that. Little mom tips. I've got some travel strategies over there, and we'll continue to build out my coursework, like I said.
You're doing incredible work. You're helping make it easier and less stressful and anxiety ridden for parents everywhere. And I thank you again for coming on and taking the time to be able to chat with us and continue to spread this information. And I hope everyone listening goes and checks you out, follows you on Instagram, and checks out some of the courses that you have.
Thank you so much. It's been such a joy.
So grateful to be able to have Dr. Kaylee Nolan on to just share all of these incredible tips on how parents can optimize the way that their kids are moving and provide a really great environment around them to do so. Again, if anybody out there is looking for a COBA board or some sort of implement that they can use in their home to give them some resistance without needing to have huge heavy weights, go to the link in the show notes. Use code OPTIMAL at checkout to get 15% off. Again, this board is something that's so incredible at helping us load in our squats and in our deadlifts, and also helps promote really, really good form. Jen and I use it. I swear, every time I use it, I'm sore the next morning when I wake up. It's a great tool that's easy to store away, easy to travel with if you're hopping in the car and going somewhere, but can still really help you load those things up. So go grab the link in the show notes, use code OPTIMAL at checkout for 15% off, and get yourself a COBA board. And we will see you next time here on the Optimal Body Podcast.